Hi, this is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. I talk about my kids a lot. My first kid was truly my little doggy Lois. She was our first child. She did every single thing with us. That baby girl has been on so many planes in different states. And today, while her life is a little bit more stable and at home, we try to treat her like she's a queen still. She may not fly first class, but she does get first class treats and delivery through PetSmart. So if you're a mom of any kind, don't forget, PetSmart is a beautiful place to get everything you need, and you can get it in so many different ways. It's making life easier. So PetSmart, thank you for being a bright spot in my life and in Lois's life. Shop in-store or online at PetSmart.com. PetSmart, anything for pets.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at Hero.co with code IHEART. That's Hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on Hero.co.
Hi, this is Pod Save the UK. I'm Nish Kumar.
And I'm Coco Khan. And today, we're going on an adventure in the culture war. I hate that phrase, culture war. What even is that?
It's the more boring sequel to the Star Wars film franchise.
I really wish it was an actual, like, cultured war. You know, like, oh, let's fight about Lucian Freud or Sigmund Freud. Who was the best?
To talk about the culture war and how screwed it's left us all, we'll be joined by political commentator Ash Sarkar.
And later, we'll be discussing Labour's latest drama and give you a quick update on the bins that got you all fired up last week.
But first, there's been a lot of big stories this week. Trump has threatened steel tariffs, which could disrupt our economy. The ceasefire in Gaza hangs in the balance. And the UK has refused to sign an international declaration to make AI open, inclusive and ethical. But today, we want to focus on immigration. We don't want to focus on immigration.
Yeah, yeah.
We have felt obliged to focus on immigration.
Right. So Parliament this week saw the second reading of the government's new border security bill. Simultaneously, the Home Office dropped a press release saying that nearly 19,000 foreign criminals and people with no right to be in the UK have now been removed since the government took office. Foreign criminals, those are the words, and people with no right to work. It is clearly incendiary language, and in typical British news fashion, the TV headlines regurgitated it.
The government today announced the fruits of its efforts to deport foreign criminals and illegal migrants.
Thousands of illegal migrants and foreign criminals have been deported.
We have images of illegal migrants and foreign offenders being deported.
So those are clips from Sky News, Channel 5 and GB News. We should note that when assessing coverage from BBC and Channel 4, we didn't find parroting of the foreign criminals line, as rightfully they shouldn't do, because this conflation between undocumented immigrants and criminals is incredibly dangerous and disingenuous rhetoric.
Right, exactly. You say illegal and it conjures up questions of morality, right? But legal status is not about morality. It's often totally arbitrary, which may explain why the Home Office fails to declare exactly how many foreign criminals make up the nearly 19,000 people that they have deported, opting to only state that the number is up 21% over the previous 6 months.
The news coverage was accompanied, helpfully, by some pretty revolting images supplied by the government of workplaces being raided and people being escorted onto planes, which we won't be sharing on this podcast. Just as we record this morning, we've also heard the news that anybody who has arrived outside of legal routes, including asylum seekers with valid claims, will be refused citizenship. I'm really struggling with this week. And I'm really struggling with this sort of latest outbreak of anti-immigrant feeling.
Yeah.
The government releasing images as a kind of propaganda exercise has really sat poorly with me.
Yeah.
It feels like performative cruelty.
There's been a constant drip feed of, let's be honest, racist anti-migrant rhetoric for, at least 10 years. I mean, what Labour's doing, how is it different to the Go Home vans? How is it different to anything that Reform have been doing? In fact, actually, when Labour have been publicising this work, they've been using Reform colours, which, you know, shows you how unoriginal this all is. This is hostile environment all over again, right? But just putting aside my own feelings of, like, moral disgust around it, I don't even get it politically. I don't understand it. Like, you're never going to out-reform Reform. Also, you've just taken their argument that this is the single biggest threat to the UK. You've just taken that from them. Like, you've agreed with their premise. You've pushed no counter. How does that even make sense to do that if you're opposed to that party? I don't even understand it.
The logic here is that you can head off the far right by essentially a program of rhetorical and policy-based appeasement. But there are always too numerous amount of studies that are warning people that that doesn't work. And all it does is legitimizes a program of anti-immigrant policy and cruel rhetoric that just results in far-right parties making electoral gains. Mm. Because actually, at the end of the day, you can do all of this crap, but when it comes to an election, the far-right parties will still say, we can go further. We can go further. And all you're doing is legitimizing this idea that immigrants pose a threat to your way of life, or immigrants are a drain on resources that are preventing you from being able to pay your heating bills or buy groceries. And this is really the crux of everything that I'm frustrated about here, right? There are so many moral arguments that we can make about how we treat the most vulnerable people on this planet. There are so many moral arguments that we can make about the rhetoric that we should be using and the policies that we should be enacting. But let me also just ask, who is this benefiting?
Okay. Yes.
Who is this benefiting? Does this policy help you pay your heating bill? No. Does this policy help you pay for your groceries as bills skyrocket? No, it does not. It does absolutely nothing to improve the lives of people in this country. Most people in this country, I'm told, just want to get a train to see a doctor. This program from the Labour Party does not help that at all. Who is benefiting from this? And when they talk about delivery, why is this the only thing they seem to be able to deliver on? Constantly, Keir Starmer has been going on about delivery, delivery, delivery. What have they actually delivered? What concrete policies have they actually delivered apart from deporting vulnerable people? We want them to deliver, but what we want them to deliver on is better services on the NHS, is better public services, better public transport. But all they seem to be delivering on is something that is designed to appease Nigel Farage, and it will never work. The Labour Party is determined to sign its own electoral death warrant.
The one glimmer of hope that I tried to take from this horrible, this grim mess was that the government said it was also targeting the employers who exploit these people. It's a subject that really, like, irks me, that you go for the workers and not the people who exploit them. And so they're trying to contort themselves and say, no, we're doing this to sort of be good or be kind. But fundamentally, when they release the footage, they don't release any footage of the employers being cracked down on. The sorts of business they have been cracking down on are things like nail salons and car washes. These are famously environments where it's modern slavery, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, you're going after the slaves rather than the actual slave masters, which I find a little bit grim, despite what they say. There was a bust recently in Bristol where a number of undocumented migrant workers were removed, arrested. Some were taken to detention centres. There was a quote from one of the women affected in The Guardian. I just want to read it out. She says, they arrived around 4 a.m, so these are the immigration officers, knocking very hard and shouting to open the caravan doors. Many of us woke up scared. I'm outraged. Fathers and mothers being searched as if they were animals. We are workers, not criminals.
Yeah, I don't know what consolation it is to someone drinking tap water that's filled with shit that they've deported some people out of this country. Next time you're glugging down a pint of human feces, to think, well, on the plus side, at least some incredibly vulnerable people have been treated poorly and we had photographic evidence.
Oh, my God. So the government suggests that it's going to be doing more to make the asylum system fairer and clamp down on people smuggling. I love the way they always say claim asylum and they don't use the word refugees.
Because you
say the word refugees and it emotes a feeling of humanity and they refuse to do it. But anyway, these vague promises certainly don't mean much, and asylum campaign groups aren't happy either. So here's Nathan Phillips from Asylum Matters.
This is an asylum bill with no asylum policies. It's just a rehash of the same old failed deterrence policies that criminalise people seeking asylum, that lock up refugees and have no impact on crossings, other than driving up deaths. There is nothing on safe routes, which is the only way to actually disrupt smuggling gangs. There's nothing on the right to work, despite 81% of the British public backing lifting the ban, and it generating 1.5 billion of that ever elusive economic growth thereafter. There is nothing on overhauling substandard asylum accommodation, ensuring people are housed in communities, not camps, barracks and barges that private contractors are making a killing of. There's nothing on asylum support rates, which are currently a poverty packet of just £1.25 a day for those in hotels, driving people into the hands of exploiters. Instead, it's more of the same old failed policies, more criminalisation of people seeking asylum, more border violence, more performative cruelty. And it's playing with fire after the racist riots we saw in our streets last summer. This bill is a disgrace and they need to go back to the drawing board, guys.
It's very sobering to hear people who have actually studied these issues talk about the legislation that's being pushed through. And listen, if this is pissing you off and you want to get involved, you can sign up to the Fight the Anti-Refugee Laws pledge, which is linked to in our show notes. There you can also find a template letter and briefings that you can send to your MP. There's even a template motion that you can ask your local councillors to pass.
And in case you didn't know, by the way, we have our own YouTube channel where you can find all our episodes, clips, exclusive YouTube content like full interviews, and you can see our facial expressions. They're normally quite sad and angry.
Yeah, what a week to be bragging about being able to see my face.
Well, listen, you know, they want to see the face. Well, maybe they do. If you do, please do come and join us on Podsave the UK on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe as well so you don't miss anything. We have a range of sad faces. It's very impressive.
If you want to see a man who looks like Liverpool footballer Mo Salah was found in a hedge this morning, fulminate and look like he's on the verge of an anger stroke, then by all means, join us over on YouTube. After a break in which I will use the time to severely improve my vibe and mood, we'll be joined by Ash Sarkar to talk about, amongst other things, how identity politics has been co-opted to divide the left and what we can do about it. I'm going to go have a satsuma and a walk around the block.
Podsave the UK is brought to you by Shopify.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run and grow your own business.
Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionising millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can successfully grow your business.
Covering all your sales channels from a Shopfront-ready POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram and TikTok.
It's also full of the industry-leading tools that are ready to ignite your growth. Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without learning new skills in design or coding.
And thanks to award-winning help with an extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way.
What's lovely about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify will be there to empower you with the confidence and control to take your business to the next level. So it's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. This is Possibility powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk to take your business to the next level today.
shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk. So, the government is trying to out-reform reform by stirring up yet another moral panic about immigration. But is stoking the culture war a winning strategy, or will it just alienate them from the majority of their voters? In her new book, Minority Rule, Adventures in the Culture War, Ash Sarkar explores the forces that disempower and divide us today, highlighting how a minority elite are profiting from the chaos they create. And you probably know her as a contributing editor at Navarra Media and one of the UK's best progressive voices. Welcome to Podsave the UK,
Ash. One of the UK's few progressive voices. So obviously I'm amongst the best. There's not that many.
It doesn't.
You're like, okay, well, you're definitely top five.
Why are you undermining me trying to pay you a compliment? We're barely a minute into this.
She likes to be precise. That's one of the reasons she is the best.
I've got an incredibly active self-loathing gland. Like, that's
sure,
what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I recognise that. I think that's
it's
a familiar
standard
trait
for all progressives, isn't it?
Yeah, like, hi, I'm so here. It's nice to be here. I hate myself. Hello, hello.
So imagine not hating yourself. What do those people think about on a day-to-day basis?
My partner, he doesn't hate himself. He just like walks along the street and he's like, and I'm like, what
is that like to be a well-rounded person? What is that?
Boring. It's boring, isn't it?
Yeah. So boring.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
It's great. Mm. We've read it.
Oh my God.
It's very exciting. Let's define terms. The book discusses how the culture war divides us. And it's, again, one of those terms that we hear every day, but very few people seem willing or interested in defining what they mean by it. What do you understand the phrase culture wars to mean?
So for me, culture war is about a way of understanding politics as these competing identity groups. So no matter what you're talking about, you could be talking about things to do with identity groups like, you know, anti-racism or the fight against transphobia, or something which has got nothing to do with identity like the climate. And you present that conflict as being driven by these individuals who want to change how you think, how you speak, how you live. And the thing about culture war is that it's like there's 1,000 doors and they all open onto the same place, mm-hmm. which is here is this minority, and there might be a self-appointed minority like Just Stop Oil, or there might be an identity minority like trans people, and they're trying to impose their will on you. So that's where the phrase minority rule first came from for me, was realizing that every time you watch Good Morning Britain or an LBC discussion or, I don't know, something on GB News, it's the same story. Like, you strip it of the content, it's the same story every time.
The book explores how these kind of culture wars are used to frame a conversation around how there's a small group of people that are doing things that run your life. And essentially that serves as a distraction from the small group of people that actually do run our lives, the landlords and the CEOs. It's almost a distraction tactic. Calling the book Minority Rule, what sort of stall were you trying to set out?
Well, I suppose it was a nice, elastic framework which could bring in, one, this culture war, and two, what's actually happening. Because I do think that there is an overall move in a less democratic direction. And that's not just to do with these insurgent far-right populist forces. It's to do with the fact that markets, corporations, oligarchs determine so much of what society is going to be like. And I call it a massive class of landlords, because it's a kind of capitalist who doesn't make anything. Yeah. They just own stuff and skim profits off the top. So that landlord model is everybody from your landlord in your like shitty rented flat that used to be a council house and now isn't and costs like 5 times as much. You know, that's a landlord, but so is Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Mm.
And one of the things that I wish I wrote about was AI, because there was just turbo boosters underneath it as soon as I put in the manuscript.
Yeah.
And you can maybe see the direction of travel with AI as being this huge shift which just kicks workers out of the labor market. There is no longer a market for their labor. And instead, you've just got this massive ownership class who, you know, own the means by which productive intellectual activity happens, and they're charging you for access to it.
You know, we were talking about, you know, open every door. If you look at Good Morning Britain, every single story, and it's all the same. They're all doors lead to the same place about this minority rule. Obviously, you've been in that world,
yeah.
trying to counter it. You know, famously went quite viral in 2018 with a clip, which I am going to play. So back in 2018, Ash blew up the internet after a fiery clash with Piers Morgan while he was still host of ITV's Good Morning Britain over Trump's UK visit. Here it is.
What I try and do is be fair about Trump. What you do
and to no one
is
else.
Be relentlessly anti-Trump and relentlessly pro somebody like Obama.
I'm not pro-Obama. I've been a critic of Obama. I'm a critic of the Democratic Party. Because I'm literally a communist.
I'm literally a communist. On that bombshell, we have to leave it.
I've seen that clip so many times down the years. I don't think I actually realised that Piers Morgan said, on that bombshell. I don't think it's a great idea for Piers Morgan to so specifically invoke Alan Partridge when he seems to be a hair's breadth away from Partridge at any given moment. You write about this specific moment in the book, and you know, bringing together the threads of the conversation and the way that the book draws it all together, it's these kind of culture war-y arguments are essentially used as a tactic to keep us divided, to stop this kind of power and capital grab. What do you believe Piers Morgan's understanding is of his participation in these kind of things?
I think that he is somebody who knows what's good for his career.
Yeah.
And he understood quite early on that if you want reach and you want an audience and you also want to do well in this environment where, you know, legacy broadcast needs social media in order to bring an audience in, you have to stimulate the emotions of outrage and conflict and hostility. And one of the things that is very clever about him, people think that him interrupting you all the time is, you know, a failure on his part. It's not. It's his method. And you could see it in that clip, which is, I got genuinely wound up. And it's the thing which tipped me over to being like, you're an idiot. I hate this. I'm a communist. Blah. Because you are just jabbed and prodded. And so he knows how to get that out of people. And the thing about this form of media is that your role is cast before you go on.
Mm.
So you might enter into it and go, well, I'm Ash and I am anti-Trump, but I'm also anti-Obama and I'm very left-wing and I can hold space for nuance. That is not what the producer intends to get from you. That's not what the host intends to get from you. And it's very, very difficult, and I would say probably impossible, to push back against that enough to carve out space for you to bring the entirety of the nuance that you want to bring. And people are cast on the basis, and I talk about this in the book, of identity. So if you're a young, brown, left-wing woman, a load of positions are sort of put into your mouth. It's like, well, you believe this, don't you? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
So is it worth doing stuff like that? I mean, I ask that because, you know, we have a lot of soul searching on this show about, like, how do you penetrate this impossible fortress of right-wing infrastructure? And also, it just seems like such a drag and, like, not fun and upsetting.
But
like,
then we've also had, like, a range of opinions of people saying it's not worth going into those spaces. And then other people who say, well, if you go on there and you talk to one person who you wouldn't have otherwise spoken to, isn't that incredibly worthwhile? Mm. Like, where do you stand on this now? Because, you know, you and I have done a lot of the same shows and, let's face it, upset a lot of the same people. Where do you stand on the value of the upsetting we have done?
There are so many things I look back on and regret, I guess. The communist clip, not one of them.
Yeah.
Like, very much not one of them.
Why don't you regret that?
Because
I didn't mean that to sound pejorative.
Wow, that? You're in a Nicky mood.
Should, like, you should really feel bad about that.
No, I just wanted to hear what I'm curious as to why.
It's incredible. My self-loathing is sort of out of my head and taken on form. Well, this is like.
I thought it was kind of amazing at the time. And we were talking about it before you arrived. And I was like, people don't say the word communist out loud anymore.
Yeah.
It's all gone a bit McCarthyite.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'd actually heard it. And, I mean, you know, it's, in a way, this is a bit of a tangent, but, like, you know, I call myself a feminist. But the word feminist, oh my God, very not chic right now because it's so wrapped up in transphobia.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that's like, no, I'm not going to cede this word to you lot. I am a feminist. I'm not ceding it to you.
I remember feeling so upset after I'd done it because I felt like I had just messed up royally and that I had made the left look like a bunch of jokers. And I phoned my partner and he was like, he hadn't watched it. And he was like, don't worry about it. We'll watch it when you get home. And, you know, everyone has a bad interview. Don't freak out. Then he called me back 10 minutes later. He's like, what are you talking about? That's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And I went under my duvet and I hid.
Yeah.
Because I just couldn't face myself. And then I came out and, like, went to just, like, this, like, random pub in Walthamstow and, like, everyone was buying me drinks. And I was like, so it's going back to your question about, like, how do you make the judgment about whether it's worth doing or not is I don't have a hard and fast rule. And yeah. I think part of it is because I'm a deeply unstrategic person. I'm a very gut-led person at heart. And I think that you have to reckon with a few contradictory things all at once. One is, like I said, you do not choose how you are framed.
Yeah.
You do not choose the framing of the issue. But there are these moments of, I guess, like, authentic expression that cut through. I think people liked that clip, not sure. because there were like millions and millions of latent communists in the UK just waiting.
You Manchurian candidate, yeah. a whole generation.
Like, da, 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 da. Like, you know, I wish that was the case, but I don't think that's why. I think it's because they saw something real.
Mm, 100%.
And I think that that cut through. And you've also got to think about what's going to bring you into contact with people that aren't like you.
Yeah.
The thing about doing something like, you know, whether it's Good Morning Britain or even GB News, is that you have an audience of people who are not like you. They've got different life experience, different demographics, different educational status. That's all good.
Yeah.
One thing that you didn't give yourself credit for is that loads of progressives are very boring. Or so boring and so sanctimonious and are not good TV.
I'm boring and sanctimonious at home.
Yeah, yeah. But that's better for us.
Yeah, that's going to be like, I saved that for my husband. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's great to engage with the full complexity of that as a thing, because, you know, for a long time, I did a lot of those shows and then I was like, I think I'm going to stop because I think I'm actually, if anything, making the situation worse, because I think I've become a sort of character in a culture war. And now I'm just something that, it, like a name that people use to sort of rile up their base.
Oh yeah, you became a meme.
Yeah.
And like people, like I see it on Twitter all the time, like people do this like list of people they deport and it's always me and you next to each other, brother.
Oh! It's quite touching in a way.
Really on the same plane to the motherland. Like.
It really is like being Thelma and Louise off a cliff. Yeah, it is, yeah. But at the same time, I also think, you know, How do you persuade people that don't agree with you if you don't go on those shows? And like one of the founders of this podcast network went on Fox News last week because he believes it's important to sort of express some of these ideas in that kind of space. And I'm relieved. Just on a personal level, I'm very stressed for you.
Tony doesn't like seeing me on those programs. He's my therapist. He's like, we talked about this. Yeah.
We've talked a lot about how the right utilises identity politics, you know, again, this framing of the minority rule, which isn't actually the case. But you also talk about the left and how we've bought into it. And I wanted to touch a little bit on that. So, I mean, obviously you spend time talking about it, so it's kind of annoying for me to be like, can you just summarise it in about 100 words? But can you?
Okay.
It's like the first chapter of the book. It's like when you read the book, you're like, okay, we're straight in with the spiciest stuff.
The more I examined what the right were doing, the more I saw that these were tactics or rhetorical gestures which had their origins on the left. And you have to then take that seriously. Mm. You can't just be like, well, I choose not to see. Yeah. Like it's there and it's screamingly obvious. So that's why I wanted to start the book there, not because I wanted to cement my status as a newly signed author by betraying the movement that I came from and be like, I'm on my way to a Telegraph column.
You're 10 tweets away from a Tory safe seat in Hertfordshire.
You just wait. I looked at that Claire Fox career path and I was like, that's me.
I genuinely have moments being like, when I flip to right wing to make loads of money, what will be my thing? And I think it's that, I mean, I've got a few. I drive a car.
All right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I love driving my car. I eat meat. I love meat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some kinks should be shamed. I think they deserve it.
This is the most Desi thing I've had in my life. Like, every single Desi I speak to is like, yeah, some kinks should be shamed. You know, my mum thinks that, my friends think that. And like, all my white friends are like, no, we have to be really accepting. And every Desi I know is like, no, we don't.
No. Some of them deserve shame.
No, we do not.
Sometimes our upbringing does come out of us. at moments we don't necessarily expect.
Yes, you're like, oh, wow, that was really the ancestors speaking through me. Yeah.
Sorry, please, I interrupted you.
Oh, yeah, that was a great tangent. So I opened the chapter by talking about a situation that I was in. Mm-hmm. I was facilitating this big discussion. It was on the left. There was like maybe, you know, a couple of hundred people in the room. And the idea was everyone weighs in on what's gone wrong for the left in the last few years and what should be done about it. And there were some speakers whose job it was to sort of come in and set out their stall. And people could decide, do we agree with them or not? And one of the speakers was Roger Hallam, who is the co-founder of Extinction Rebellion, you know, Insulate Britain, Just Stop Oil. I think he's currently still in prison. And whatever you think about this man or these organizations, he walks the walk, all right? You cannot accuse this person of, you know, just mouthing off and doing nothing, all right? Like, he's literally put his life and his freedom on the line. So he's answering the question, what do I think's gone wrong? And he looks around the room and he goes, it's because you're all a bunch of fucking cunts. Which I think is the funniest thing
really funny.
That could have happened. And there's something about him which is very Gandalf-like. Yeah. Like, he's sort of irritated and urgent and he's got the, you know, silver hair. And so I was like, oh, this is like Gandalf vibes, where he's get out the fucking Shire and go. And I just thought, well, this is a room full of adults, right? So people might say, look, I think that you're just trying to shock us into doing what you want, or, you know, this is sort of emotionally manipulative. That would all be fine. Instead, you had grown adults being like, this has brought violence into this space. I've been harmed by it. This is bringing in white anger. And I was like, get a grip. Like, this is a old man climate activist who's done some swearing. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, look, what is the harm? And that was when I realized that that's not an isolated incident. I've seen versions of this happen a million times. I literally have heard of an organizer's weekend. So these people are supposed to be on the ground doing the work. It all fell apart because they were acting out kitchen utensils for an icebreaker. And then people were saying that the salad spinner was white supremacist and classist. And then the rest of the weekend got derailed. There is a culture of sensitivity being set at this insane bar. People competing over who can present themselves as a victim.
Yeah.
The threshold for harm being just ridiculously, comically low. And that's stopping people from being able to do useful collective work, right? Poisons and toxifies our ability to connect with one another, to work together. So if we're doing that to ourselves on the left, no wonder the right are going, well, this is a great technique. This stops people from doing anything. And that's why that chapter is important. It's not just about pointing the finger. And you know that famous saying, whenever you point a finger, there's three pointing back at you. I recognize myself in some of this stuff. And those are the things that I regret. You know, this whole thing of like, oh, every minority gets to define its own oppression. That's crazy, because that doesn't mean you're right. It doesn't mean that you're saying it in good faith.
So much of the book is about essentially how social majorities splinter themselves and prevent themselves from ever actually moving forward as a group, because we're too busy fighting amongst ourselves half of the time.
We're talking during a week where Keir Starmer is like, I'm going to do something that's never been done before. Demonize asylum seekers.
Love an original.
No one has ever done this before. And I feel like, you know that film where only one guy can remember the Beatles? I feel like that about the Blair years. So everyone's like, wow, a Labour Prime Minister going hard on immigration? I was like, am I the only one that can remember Tony Blair and David Blunkett?
But I do want to ask you, because I share a lot of your concerns about identity politics. However, I'd be lying if I didn't say that identity politics politicized me. And I really sort of saw myself, particularly around, you know, movements of black and brown people, young movements. It really made me a political person, which I wasn't really before. It opened my eyes to it. There's got to be some good in it, right? And also, we have to admit, the left has traditionally let down, you know, black and brown people, feminists. I mean, like, I'm thinking particularly about trade unions. A lot of trade unions have not done as well as they could have done for women's work and protecting women workers, and also, the black and brown workers who are working class. I don't know why we're constantly told that we're not working class. We only talk about the white working class.
It's just really weird.
I don't really get it.
It's a big part of the book.
Because what it does, and this is the, when you realise how clever these framings are, people talk about the white working class not because they want to emphasise working class, but because they want to emphasise white. And what it does is that it turns class, which is a majority economic group, into an ethnic minority.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which is, so identity politics, like genuinely, what do you feel about it?
So I think that, you know, obviously you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think it's a good thing that there is a lower tolerance for slurs in the workplace or on university campuses than there used to be. I think that's good. I think it's good that we look at the feminist struggle as not just being about the gender pay gap, but also being about, you know, vulnerability to sexual violence. These are all good things. Where I make a distinction is between liberal identity politics, by which I mean very individualistic, very concerned with representation in elite spaces, and the original identity politics, which was anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, and pioneered by working class black women in America. And they saw things completely differently. They were like, this is a vantage point. It's not a position of authority. It's not intersectional Olympics. May the most marginalized person win.
The most depressing Olympics.
You know, like, you know what I mean? It's saying this vantage point from the bottom of the labor market tells us something about how America works. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something good there.
Part of why the book needs to exist is to speak those problems and start the conversation that can move towards solutions. So, solutions.
Yeah, exactly.
What do we do?
How do we be sexier?
Okay, push-up bra.
I don't think that's going to do anything for me. My tits are where my tits are at the end of the day.
That definitely seems like a Patreon special, that one, doesn't it? Please subscribe. Because we had, have you come across that YouTuber, Jimmy the Giant?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had him on and he talked about his own journey and about how basically he was initially drawn into, I guess you call it, the alt-right, because he found them thrilling. He found them sexy, exciting.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, there was something about the left that it wasn't the same. They seemed wet.
Censorious. Cry bullies.
Yeah, exactly. All of this.
And the thing is that there is a lot of truth in those things. And so, like, the first thing is that we've got to recognise what the weaknesses are in terms of the political culture we've created.
Yeah.
If we're always pushing our glasses up our nose and going, Emily, you can't say that. Like, no wonder people...
That's a very, very accurate impression of my voice. I don't know whether that was conscious or subconscious, Hank, but it was very, very accurate.
Shots fired. But like if we're constantly doing some version of that, no one's going to push people away. Nobody likes that person.
No.
I think the second thing, which is really important to remember, and this is what reform do so well. I was on Politics Live and I encountered Rupert Lowe, who is one of Reform's MPs. And it was kind of laughable, but then you put it all together and I go, I completely see why you're doing this. From the moment we met in the green room, he like put my hand in like a bone-crushing handshake, like, which is kind of like a Donald Trump thing, like, this is what it means to be dominant. And I was just like, my finger. Oh, my little hand. Like he starts off with that. And then like we go on to set and he's interrupting. He's bombastic. He's assertive. He's constantly saying some version of, I don't care about that. Right. And what he's doing, and this is why it's so clever, is that he is being an embodiment of people's disdain for the status quo. It's not just he's saying it, he's embodying it. And I think that's something which parts of the left have often found very difficult. And it's the parts of the left which are closest to liberals. Our instinct a lot of the time is to be technocratic, policy focused, and to perhaps even defend institutions which people have completely lost faith in. So I think there's something there which is important about being able to feel anger with somebody. I think that's something which the left has missed out on, which is, I need you to feel this with me. Because that is the heart of populism. And I think there's something else, which is, again, the left's proximity to liberalism means that we've become we're censorious, but we don't tell people, well, how do you live a good life? Whereas everybody from like slime balls like Andrew Tate to, you know, Jordan Peterson or Joe Rogan or whoever else you want to name, they're saying this is how you live, right? Some of those answers are terrible. But they're saying, this is how you live. If you want to be a strong person, a successful person, this is how you do it. The left has sort of backed off from that because we've gone, well, everyone can do what they want.
Yeah.
Like, the thing about everyone can do what they want is that, like, I don't know about you, but, like, I respond really well to boundaries and instructions.
That's how
I know someone cares about me. And so I think that we've vacated that terrain.
I would just like to end this interview on giving you a personal anecdote of a time that I found myself unwittingly defending the establishment. And that is when a relative of mine basically told me that all the candles in my house, I love a candle.
Oh, yeah. A scented candle or a plain candle?
Oh, yes.
I love a scented candle.
They've got to be scented. Were bad because they're full of chemicals and I should stop burning them. Mm. And they got this information from an alt-right podcaster. Mm. And my disdain at that podcaster provoked this knee-jerk thing inside me where I wanted to debunk this claim. Mm. And so I found myself basically defending Big candle.
Big candle.
I'm out here just like, yeah, well, actually, you can have a bit of petroleum in your house. That's fine. Just out of this sort of tribal desire to fight that person. So, and it happened.
But like RFK Jr. is exactly this. He's obviously mad as a wasp sandwich. All right?
Which is actually something he prescribes in lieu of vaccinations.
Like, the guy's nuts.
Yeah.
And, you know, the anti-vax stuff is obviously, you know, hugely harmful. However, if you are in America, you have very good reasons to mistrust the FDA, to mistrust the healthcare establishment. You've got very good reasons to mistrust these people. Mm. And I think that unless you understand that people are right to be angry, they are completely right to be angry, and they are right to loathe these institutions, I don't think you can get anywhere.
There's a lot about that in Doppelganger in the Naomi Klein book, like about...
Oh, she's a big candle advocate as well.
No, not this.
Is this how you like categorise all writers? You're like, Naomi Klein, into candles. Noam Chomsky, no candles.
No candles.
Gary Young, loves incense.
She was saying the same thing about vaccinations, but I like the fact that we've now just, it feels like an appropriate point to land on. That in the end, it's all about big candle.
Big candle.
Big candle.
You've got to watch out with big candle.
Will you be having a signature scent made as a marketing tool?
I would love that. I for some reason, Bloomsbury are like, that's themed? Going to be a waste of money.
The minority rule candle.
I would love that so much. I like, you know how everyone had a nervous breakdown during lockdown?
Yeah.
Mine was expressed by making my own scented candles at home.
Are you joking? I was joking about you releasing a scented candle.
No, I'm not joking at all. My favourite was pink, peppercorn, bay and raspberry.
Delicious. You'd want to eat it. Ash Larker, thank you so much for coming on Podsafe
UK. Thank you so much for having me.
Ash's book, Minority Rule, Adventures in the Culture War, is out soon and will be accompanied by a tie-in series of pink peppercorn scented candles.
More bad news for the government this week. Health Minister Andrew Gwynn was sacked after it was alleged that he'd been sending racist, sexist and anti-Semitic messages to a WhatsApp group lovingly entitled, I just want to groan it out, Trigger Me Timbers. Members of the group included Burnley MP Oliver Ryan and 11 councillors who have since been suspended from the Labour Party pending an investigation.
I know that there's obviously very serious issues at stake here, but just as a sideline issue, I think only naked photos are a thing that could be more embarrassing than the name of WhatsApp groups you're a member of being released to the public.
Trigger Me Timbers, though. I think if I got the thing like, you are invited to this, I would just decline.
Yeah,
I don't want to go in that
it's
group.
It's not even that they're named after offensive things. The names are just so embarrassing that no one needs to have those available. If you're a member of a WhatsApp group called Trigger Me Timbers, you should leave that out of sheer shame. But anyway, look, the Labour Party, thankfully, has moved pretty quickly on this one. But obviously, it is disappointing and unfortunately unsurprising to see exactly the same kind of behaviour that we were furious with the Tories coming out from Labour MPs. And we have to focus on one alleged Trigger Me Timbers message in particular. Gwynne had a message from a 72-year-old woman who contacted her about her bin saying, as you have been re-elected, I thought it would be an appropriate time to contact you with regard to the bin collections. When the letter from the resident was shared in the WhatsApp group, Gwynne wrote a suggested response. Dear resident, fuck your bins. I'm re-elected and without your vote. Screw you. P.S. Hopefully you'll all have croaked it by the all-outs.
Fuck your bins. No, absolutely not. Bins are important. They should put fuck your bins on his epitaph.
Again,
morbid thing to say, but
we talk about it all the time. You talk about where politics actually interacts with your life on a day-to-day basis, and bin collection is one of those things. That is an important way in which the government actually impacts on the day-to-day lives of people in this country. I know it sounds like it's a frippery, but like, it's not.
Also,
bin collection
like,
is
you're
important.
You're an MP. Of yeah. course you're going to receive communications about them. It's not like she was asking like, oh, who do you prefer, Drake or Kendrick? Do you know what I mean? It's not irrelevant. Anyway, speaking of bins, we had an incredible response to our Bristol bins conversation from last week's show. As a quick reminder, the council there is moving to a 4-week bin cycle, partly for environmental reasons, but mostly to save a bit of money. Lots of you, unsurprisingly, wrote in to say you didn't want a 4-week bin cycle. If anything, you want more frequent collections. We also had a strong reaction to Nish's question about the grim thought of nappies clogging up the bins for a month. But a listener points out that Bristol actually has a year-long trial of a nappy recycling service, which began in July 2024 in partnership with Pura Nappies.
And I can't believe this is actually in the script and I'm reading it out loud, but speaking of nappies, we also had a voice note in from children's nurse and potty learning expert Rebecca Mottram, which we must say is not particularly political, but we felt we should include it in the show because it's perhaps a useful public service announcement for any prospective parents out there.
One thing we need to remember is that poo actually goes down the loo. And it's very, very common for people to just wrap up poo in a nappy and put that in the bin. And actually what we need to be doing is getting that poo and tipping it out of the nappy and flushing it down the toilet. And that in itself will create a significant reduction in the amount of poo going into our rubbish system.
I don't have children. I assumed that the process was you just wrap the shit up in a nappy and chucked it all in the bin. That's new information to me. I hold my hands up.
Poo down the loo, that would be a great jingle.
I have to say, now that you say it out loud, put poo down the loo does seem like the sort of advice we should have been able to intuit. Yeah. I feel as a voting age adult, I should have been able to figure out that poo goes in the toilet.
Listen, the moral of the story is do not mess with the bins when you're in Britain.
Based on our online mailbox, since we started talking about the bins, people really give a shit about the bins.
Yes.
But I'll tell you where you shouldn't be putting your shit, in the bins.
So thank you for writing in, everyone. We love hearing these small p political stories. So if you've got anything else you think we should draw attention to, please do email us at psuk@reducelistening.co.uk.
And that's it. Thanks for listening to Poo Save the UK. Don't forget to follow us at Pod Save the UK on Instagram, TikTok and Twitter. We're also now on Blue Sky. Follow us at podsavetheuk.crooked.com. And if you want more of us, please make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel to look and see what level of dishevelment my hair and beard combination is at on a week-to-week basis.
How long are we keeping up with Poo Save the UK?
I think we leave it, we flush it.
I think we should do the credits with Poo. Poo Save the UK is a Reduced Listening production for Crooked Media.
Thanks to senior producer James Tyndale and assistant producer May Robson.
Our theme music is by Vasilis Fotopoulos.
Thanks to our engineer, Jeep Vasani.
The executive producers are Anishka Sharma, Louise Cotton and Madeline Herringer, with additional support from Ari Schwartz and Katie Long.
But remember to hit subscribe for new shows on Thursdays on Amazon, Spotify or Apple, or wherever you get your Poocasts.
Yeah!